Well, Devin, your hoodie's really nice. Have I already told you that I like that hoodie?
Mm-hmm.
On the podcast, though?
Not on the podcast, so
you can say it again. I want to publicly say that you're wearing Tom and Jerry on your chest.
Uh-huh. Where he belongs.
Right to the left and below your heart. Wait, to the right and below your heart? Which side is your heart on?
I mean, he's right in the middle, so yeah, you don't have to...
But compared to your heart.
But
is your heart directly in the center of your body?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone's heart is in a slightly different place. That's a fact about human anatomy.
Yeah, like yours is in your butt.
Mine is near butt. You know butt? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it on your right or your left?
It's directly between the cheeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like painful almost. Like.
It actually gives you a sort of ergonomic boost that you wouldn't expect.
Wow, okay. It's like greater blood flow to the area.
All the blood's flowing from the area.
Oh, that doesn't sound very good.
My butt is the center of my body.
I also have a Tom and Jerry rug.
Really? Wow.
It's like... Do you know in the cartoon, I meant to be typing Tom and Jerry, but I typed Daikatana.
They're basically the same thing.
Where he gets I don't know what it's, I don't know what happens, but he gets flattened against stairs.
Oh, and
do you know this? So it's a flat rug where the idea is we don't have stairs, unfortunately, but eventually we may have stairs and we can put them on. Oh.
Oh boy.
Pop filter falling off. Oh boy, this thing's sliding. Having some of our very own cartoon slapstick. God damn it!
You're really you've become an enormous Tom and Jerry fan in the last I don't know year. Because wait, is there a little cranker on there?
I mean, there's a nail, or not a nail, a screw.
Oh, hold on, actually, maybe we could, Devin,
that seems to be a little bit better.
You're channeling your inner, I can't think of someone who fixes things.
What is this?
It's a multi-tool.
Is it, Master of None?
Aziz Ansari has nothing to do with this, Devin.
It's way better. It's like, it's like normal now.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
Well. I want to point out that Tim, before we were recording, said that, all of his, his stands, his mic stands mm-hmm. do this.
Yeah. Yeah, so to describe what's happening.
They all fall.
To people who aren't watching the non-existent video podcast at home, it's the little thing you put the mic in, the little mic holder, the little hand that you put on the stand,
mm-hmm.
not the stand, but the hand. And it just falls, and they all do this. And most of them will have a little crank like mechanism where you don't need to use a tiny Aziz Ansari multi-tool to fix mm-hmm. it. And even when you do that, it'll still just fall. I had this other one that yesterday, as I was recording four times, it just fell off the stand. The whole thing just fell on the ground. Like it didn't have a job to do.
Like the,
I'm not paying
the hand
it big
fell
bucks.
Off?
No, the entire microphone with the hand, in the hand.
Yeah, yeah. So the hand
okay,
fell
yeah,
off.
True, yeah. The microphone didn't stay there uh-huh. where it was, just floating in midair.
Pulled a George Lucas. The stand was being directed by George Lucas. It was like... Okay, now cut off his hand. Now his hand's coming off.
Oh, I see. Yeah, actually, what you're describing is a 100% of George Lucas.
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually, yeah, that's what, I'm just now remembering that audio engineers call that a Lucas,
uh-huh.
a George. You're the mic Georged,
mm-hmm.
which is when gets the hand cut off.
Yeah. He would go into Industrial Light and Magic as they're working on they're like, oh, George, we've got a new alien screaming sound. And he's like, okay, cool. And then he goes over and loosens a hand and it falls off. And he's like, got Lucas.
God, the notorious prankster George Lucas. He just goes around Lucas.
That's why he like. That's why he didn't direct like the sequels of Star Wars because he was too busy being a prankster.
Yeah. Because J.J. Abrams is famously very like anal retentive about his hands.
I didn't even mean those. I meant like
the other sequels,
like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and stuff.
Oh,
he was like when he met with David Lynch. He's like, David, I know I can entrust you in this while I'm off doing pranks.
I have some important business to attend to. There's thousands of microphones. So. Wait, did you said David Lynch? Did he direct Star Wars?
Yeah. You don't know about this?
I forgot.
Every Star Wars is directed by David Lynch. No, he tried to get David Lynch to direct Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Wow. I know you've told me that before, and it's just as shocking now as probably the first time.
Yeah.
Wow. What would that have been? That's such a disappointment.
It probably would have been really bad is the thing. Like, because like...
Yeah, actually, we literally know what it looks like when David Lynch directs like a beloved sci-fi.
Well, that's why, though. Like, I think it's because he directed Dune.
Oh, my God.
But then, or maybe, I'm not sure. It could have been before that happened that they talked. But, like, it would have just been David Lynch, like, wanting to, like, do something crazy. But then, like, everyone else, like, fighting against that, I feel like.
Yeah.
Or, like, I'm sure there would have been some people who would have been, like, for it, but it's not like
it would have been a source of tension probably on the set. There would have been problems.
Yeah They'd be like, okay Dave, we need to talk about like this 5-minute zoom in onto Darth Vader's ear. We're thinking maybe we should cut that.
We like the part where you go inside of Darth Vader's ear and you reveal that there's an entire other galaxy within it that is never referenced again, David. I think it's very interesting, but just for time.
Yeah.
It's a third of the movie's runtime, so we're probably going to need to cut it out.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to keep the zoom into Yoda's ear, we gotta cut one of these days.
You can only have one 10-minute zoom sequence into someone's ear.
Oh, and George did request another guy's arm getting cut off also. So if you could work that in somewhere.
Actually, I would love to see the like the David Lynch like really slow arm fall. That would have been a good use for the weird like David Lynch slow motion tension stuff.
Yeah.
Just
Yeah. And like it would have been like Luke's arm gets cut off, and then it's like a shot of him like in pain, and like and it's like from Inland Empire where like another face is like superimposed on his face. It's all fucked up. That would also be really good. That would like fit Star Wars, I feel like.
Yeah, actually I'm kind of I think that this was really kind of a loss.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about it. Someone should just make an edit of the movie that just superimposes stuff and slows stuff down and does weird things. It just cuts to Eraserhead.
Yeah.
Rabbits is just in there for like a few seconds.
Oh, that'd be so good. Yeah.
Because he would have somehow, before ever making it, put it in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, going to be part of his plan. But that's why he like backed out, because he was like, they weren't going to let me do rabbits as part of it.
That's what was going to be inside of Darth Vader's ear. And it would have been then canon forever. That's like within Anakin's body.
That's like, he was like trying to show like the essence of like the dark side. Like the dark side of the Force is rabbits.
That.
Honestly, that Devin, works.
Devin. Can we reach out to David Lynch and just ask him to make a new version of Return of the Jedi?
I mean, yeah, I'm sure Disney will go for it.
Yeah. They'll sign off. Yeah. I'm sure David will go for it too. Disney's
get
the least
the
of our
fuck
problems.
Out of my house. That's probably what he would say if he showed up.
That's Devin, you perfectly nailed the way that David Lynch swears.
There's something, I mean, I've heard enough of him swearing.
You've watched that one clip thousands of times of him talking about cell phones or whatever. Isn't that where he...
Yeah. There's other clips of him, like, on set being like...
Yeah.
Where the fuck is my monkey? Whatever. Well, we're talking about another creative today, another creative mind.
Honestly, John Romero, no, he's not the David Lynch of video games.
No, absolutely not.
If anyone is, it like, certainly isn't him.
Yeah, he's like the farthest you can get from David Lynch, I feel like. But yeah, we are returning for one more time to talk about John Romero.
the John Romero return. Also, you may notice there's no lag and we're not speaking over each other quite as much as normal.
Yeah.
Because this is the first return to in-person recording.
We're still going to talk over each other because we're bad.
Yeah, it's still going to be just as awkward, poorly timed, and unfunny as it has been, but... At least, like, you can hear that we're in the same room now on some level.
on some level.
It's mostly an intellectual level that's completely made up, but...
Yeah. So, Tim, where did we last leave our good old pal?
Old
John Romero.
Old Johnny boy. I think, you know... So, it's, yeah, like, in Quake, in the making of Quake, not in the game Quake, Johnny is just, he's at the peak of his insanity and his just like crazy egomaniacal, strange public behavior.
Uh-huh.
He's,
you would think, but yeah,
that wasn't the peak. It gets crazier. Oh my God. I guess in a sense, this game is the peak, but, he's driving around in fancy cars. He's spending all day doing death matches in Quake or Doom or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he gets... Did we already get to the part where he gets kicked out of the company?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
Carmi is just like, John, you don't do anything. Yeah. I actually... did you... You might have mentioned this before, but I saw in a YouTube video, someone mentioned that John Carmack wrote a computer program to monitor how much work John Romero did on his computer.
We did talk about that. Yeah,
which is like...
he wrote it to know how everyone in the office... Like, oh, okay.
He didn't just write the like track John protocol. That's good.
But I mean, yeah, like
still
the outcome was the same of basically of like Johnny boy.
Jonathan, come on.
Yeah. So, and his whole beef with Carmack and like his defense of it was like, that they just spent the whole time, like the whole time that they were developing a game, just waiting for the technology to be done because they couldn't make the game until the technology was done. So that was his defense of like, I like came up with a bunch of ideas and you just didn't like them and then decided like, y'all just decided to just make like Doom again, but in 3D. And like, I couldn't like prove that the idea like would work because the technology wasn't ready. So what he wanted to do was make a company or have originally his idea for id was like, we're going to split the company into like two like halves. Like John Carmack would like run the technology half and just like make the new technology. And then like the other half of the company would just like make games with the old technology so that they can make it quicker.
Oh, interesting.
And he was like, and everyone basically agreed with me, but then they didn't do it and they kicked me out is what he says.
Wow. So, I mean, I guess I have a hard time fully trusting anything John Romero is saying in the 90s or 2000s. like that's not, you know, he's not a super reliable source, but if that's true, that's actually pretty,
it is
reasonable.
A good idea. And yeah. That is his idea for his next company.
And it's kind of a shame because like if they had done that, then we could have gotten a bunch of good id games potentially.
Yeah. I think part of another issue is like his background is obviously working in like really old, like, you know, like in the 80s as a game programmer and designer where it was like, as we've talked about, like it was, things were simpler. Like it was still complicated. They had to like the program was still complicated, but it wasn't like it was with Quake where you're working in 3D space and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think they just kind of underestimated what that like jump to 3D would mean. Kind of like what we saw with, I mean, even like Miyamoto and like Nintendo, like where like Ocarina of Time took for them forever.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Because like they just, even though like he'd made Mario 64 took longer than they thought too. Like, yeah, everything just started taking longer.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's no real like way around that.
Oh, that's funny. But, so it's like the jump to 3D was just this kind of meteor that dropped in every like video game designer's lap at the time. Yeah. And it was just kind of a test of like set up your team is, and Nintendo was doing better than it.
Yeah, I mean, unsurprisingly. Yeah. But like also, I think it was just, yeah, especially like late 90s, early 2000s, it was just like there were games that just like never came out.
Yeah.
Because of that. Like they just didn't. Like they would get into a cycle, which we'll see with Daikatana, of like working on the game, and then by the time they're like almost done, like technology has moved on, and like they're not the new technology looks better than what they have done. So like you either have to just like release it and be like, I guess our game just doesn't look that good anymore, like and like it's not using the like cutting edge technology, or you have to be like, okay, we're going to change the new technology and just keep getting delayed. And there were games that were like, they just got stuck in that cycle of like constantly being like, this is what it looks like now. And then like 2 years later, like, this is what it looks like now.
Yeah. So in a sense, just from what you've told me so far, it kind of sounds like John Romero might have been like the one correct person who was just so tinted by his own ego that he couldn't execute it or whatever. And also the conflicts in it. But it's like, if they had done what he's describing, where Carmack is making the technology for the next game while John is leading the team making a game that maybe is slightly outdated, but then they could just churn out the games fast enough that it probably wouldn't matter if you're one technology cycle behind. Because like, obviously, like not that many people could have really cared that much.
Yeah. I think it's... Yeah. I think it is a good idea. Like, I think it probably would have worked out better for them if they had done that, but it's hard to say. It's also like, I don't know. It's just hard to say. But like, this is also like the beginning of, like, I mean, id Software was like the beginning of like creating an engine to then give to other companies, and that's also something he wanted to do more of, but like they didn't like the, like what has become the like Unreal / like Unity like business model of just like making like basically just like devoting your whole like company to like making that, and then just that being like the most cutting edge and being like the most easy to like get going thing for other companies and other people to make games with it. Yeah. But like, I think it's just, I mean, it's still like not easy to do today. So I think it was not easy to do back then. Cause like also they talk about how like they did this cause Daikatana uses the Quake engine, or that's what, like how they started building it. And like John Carmack didn't want to like, he was like, they were like fine with like letting them use it, but like they didn't want to like give like support. They didn't want to be like, his like thing was like, you had like 2 hours of like phone call time with him. And after that, like you're on your own. Like you got to figure out how to do everything. Which you would think shouldn't have been a problem because he'd already used it to make Quake, like John Romero.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah, we'll see potentially why that didn't really work out. But so Romero, as we left him, calls up Tom Hall, his co-designer on Doom, and's like, hey, do you want to start a new company? And we're going to put the focus on game designers instead of on the technology. Like, we're not going to make our own technology. We're going to just make games, and we're going to make them quickly. And we're just going to make a bunch of money. It was basically his idea. So, unfortunately, it wasn't, when they made the company, they didn't just do the two of them, which might have worked out better. But they brought in a couple other guys. The first is Todd Porter, who was working on an RTS titled Dominion Storm Over Gift 3.
Dominion Storm Over Gift 3. Was it the third in the Dominion Over Storm series?
You would think so. It's the worst. It's like maybe the worst video game title I've ever seen.
That's among the worst titles for anything I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's like I had to look it up because I thought the same thing. It's like it takes place on the planet Gift 3.
Gift 3.
Like,
is that's not a real planet, is it?
Yeah, it's like right after Mars.
I must have forgotten that one. Wow.
It's like in like the like solar system like naming convention, I guess, where it's like this solar system is like Gift and then it's like planet 1,
oh,
2, 3.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, yeah, it's so bad. Like it doesn't make who would ever like assume that? So like they brought him on because like that game was already like halfway done, and so like so we'll be able to release a game like really quick. Like this game will be done in like 3 months. And they also brought on Todd Porter's business party partner, Jerry O'Flaherty,
who was himself a business partner. Jerry O'Flaherty. Is that what you said? Jerry O'Flaherty.
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 Flaherty.
Flaherty.
To oversee the art department. And then Mike Wilson, who was id Software's head of marketing, to be the CEO of the company. And the company, of course, was Iron Storm. We've already talked about them a little bit on the on the Deus Ex episode.
Yeah.
But they secured a multi-game, multi-million dollar deal from Eidos Interactive, who were rich from Tomb Raider. That was like their one like hit basically, and then they were looking to like expand essentially, and they wanted Iron Storm to be like their, because they're a British or an English company.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted like Iron Storm to be like their American like side of the company almost.
God, so John really, he's just taking everyone down with him. Like lots of promising figures that are just destroyed by him.
I mean, he doesn't come out looking like the absolute worst, I feel like. Because also it's like this, like the wild success of like Doom just meant that like even if John Romero wasn't involved, like just like companies like promising like first person shooter games were just like getting like deals and stuff like thrown at them for like millions of dollars just because of like it was like that kind of like I feel like it's like similar to probably how like after Fortnite like blew up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's just like there's just like a billion like random battle royale games like getting made.
Yeah, just one of those trends that like takes over the entire industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they can make a ton of money.
Yeah. And like some of them probably did make money, but also some of them like you're clearly biting off more than you can chew. So they were encouraged to be like, this is what John Romero says, is like, they were encouraged to be like lavish and like showy and stuff to, to be like, to like, so that Eidos could have like business, like, you know, like meetings and stuff at their office. But still,
oh, you got the right guy for that. John's like, I'm on it. I already have half the things.
So they rent out the top like floor of the Chase Tower in Dallas.
Okay.
And so it's like the tall, I think it's like the tallest building in Dallas at the time. I don't know if it still is, but it's like one of those big like high rise buildings that's like all glass and stuff. And like, so the top floor had never been rented out before. It'd been built like 10 years before or something. It had never been rented out before, Probably because it was $350,000 a month rent.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was completely encased in glass. So like the, like, you know, obviously like the ceiling is glass and like all the windows. So you're getting like the Texas sun just directly like, and like, if you've ever been in like one of those office buildings where it's like all glass, it's like the, all that glass like magnifies the heat, I feel like.
Oh, wow.
Where it just like, and it just like gets trapped in there. And so it was very hard to like keep cool. And also they talk about how like, you know, at the time, even more so than like now, like glare on computer screens was like really bad.
Oh yeah. If you think of those like old monitors, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they weren't like that bright like compared to now. Like even now, like you can get glare on your screen and it's like, it sucks if you have like a window open or whatever.
And if you're like, if you're essentially outside, mm-hmm. like if you have sun above and to every side of you, then yeah. Even with like a brand new computer, you're going to have some difficulty probably.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But that's where they set up shop, and they spent even more money like designing the place, and like they built an arcade room and a movie theater.
Oh my, a movie theater?
Like a movie room, like where they could show like movies. And then they also had like a little like dormitory area where you could like sleep and stuff.
Wow. Wow.
And so they were going to work on three games. Romero was going to work on his game. Tom was going to work on his own game. And then obviously Todd Porter was going to work on that RTS game. And so he puts out like a call, like essentially like, hey, like I'm starting a new company, I'm hiring. Mm-hmm. And he hires a team entirely of like people who had never worked on a game before. Most like they were like pretty much all like Doom/Quake modders.
Oh, okay.
That like he like was impressed by.
Yeah. I mean, that actually sounds like a smart plan. Like that doesn't.
Yeah. Like it's cool, except for like, I think it's a little worrying that's like literally no one has made a game.
Yeah. That's
it's like, that's a little much.
Like, and it's like John Romero's leading. It's like, has he even made a game? Honestly, it's like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, we've talked about like the hubris of this all. And I don't think we mentioned that, like, the official title of the game is John Romero's Daikatana.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's great.
I don't know that I'd have it any other way, really.
Like, oh, yeah, I know.
If I was in that company, I'd probably be judgmental towards him, but through the lens of history, I love it.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, he wanted to make, like, he wanted to be, like, an office culture similar to, like, what it was like at id, where it was just like, you know, guys hanging out and like playing like games together after work and stuff. Like the problem is like it's different when it's like four friends like hanging out and like living together and making a game versus like a company of almost like 100 people, which is what it turned into. So you can imagine it was like not like run all that well probably. And like, I mean, just the fact that like they like had all that like crazy stuff, like the arcade and stuff, like
I love, you know, you have this big deal and you mm-hmm. I guess they've already made so many bad economic decisions at this point, it's not really justifiable, but you put an arcade in, I understand, but the fact that you then are like, let's also have a movie theater. How is nobody speaking up? Like, do we need both of these entertainment centers at our job?
I think the problem is, like, I mean, it's like most everyone at the company is also like John Romero's age, which, like, he's still in his 20s, I think, at this point.
Hmm. Yeah, or I guess he younger. Wasn't he 26 when he made younger than his 20s? He was a teenager. I think he was 26 when he made Quake, right?
I don't remember exactly.
I heard the number 26. So I'd assume he's in his like late 20s at this point. Actually, it sounds like he's probably right around our age, which is...
He was born 1967, so I guess he would have been like 30, because he started the company in 1997.
Oh.
So he would have been 30 exactly.
Oh, okay.
But so like, everyone he hired was like basically under 30.
Yeah.
And then his other like co-founders are probably like about 30. There was like, I think Mike, like the CEO was like older, the marketing guy. But like, yeah, they were all very young, I think.
Yeah.
Which probably doesn't help. But yeah, like the fact that, yeah, it is crazy that like, I think they were just... They'd had so much success that it was like, there's no way we're going to like not make a bunch more money.
Yeah. There's no way we're going to crash and burn very publicly and dramatically.
Yeah. So his idea for Daikatana was, I'm going to reclaim like the Daikatana like that we like used in John Carmack's D&D game, that like that whole like thing, and like that's gonna be the centerpiece for my like next like ultimate game, where it's gonna have like more levels, more environments, more weapons, more enemies than like any other like first person shooter game. And that was kind of his like ideas, like there's just gonna be more of everything basically. Mm-hmm. Like his like criticism of Quake was like, you see basically like all of the monsters in like the first like few levels, and like you get pretty much all of the weapons. Like he was like, you're not getting like a continual like supply of like new stuff as you play through the game. It was like, it's basically just like new levels, but that's it.
That's not a bad observation, because like that, I mean, Doom does have some progression like that, but it's like,
but it is not a ton either.
Yeah. And like that is kind of how all first person shooters work now, or like a lot of them, it seems. And that's how you'd want them to work, it seems like. So it's like that kind of is a push towards the future. That's good. But
So his idea was like, they'll take the Quake engine, and they'll be able to build Daikatana in like a year. And that was in 1997, obviously. Now we know Daikatana did not release until 2000. So also at the time, Twitter didn't exist. But what did exist for like nerds on the internet were plan files. I don't remember if we talked about this with Quake, plan but like...
files.
They were doing this as well, where basically it was like, you on your website, you like, you would have a plan file, and it was basically like, it was like Twitter, but it was like just your own stuff, whereas like you would like post an update like every day or every couple of days or whatever. It'd have like the date and then like a little message, and so like they would like put like updates on like the game as they're making it. Like, oh, we just added this to the game or whatever. Like, this is what the game, like, the new plan is or whatever. It'd be that. And so Romero, like, then, like, had his own for Daikatana, and, like, a bunch of the other people at the company had them, and, like, a bunch of people at id had them. And they had, like, the 90s equivalent of, like, a Twitter, like, flame war kind of thing. Where, where
God,
like, Romero would, like... War. Like say stuff in the press, being like taking like what like the people at working at id thought was like too much credit for like Quake, and like he like that he was saying like he basically did the whole like he like basically did everything on Doom and stuff like that.
Oh jeez.
I couldn't actually find like those like quotes of what he was saying, so it's hard to say like if they were just like taking it too personally, or if it's hard to imagine that he didn't say stuff like that though.
Yeah. I could imagine both being true. I'm sure he was taking too much credit, and I'm sure that they were all a little just resentful towards him.
Yeah. And so, this is from the book, Masters of Doom.
Classic.
Where he, he talks about this, like, this back and forth between, like, the employees of the company, like, getting mad at each other, and it says, like, Carmack didn't really, like, wasn't really, like, a part of it for a while, but then he eventually was like, I'm gonna like, set some things straight. And he had a two-page profile in Time magazine, where he like said that like, contrary to what Romero's been saying, Romero didn't like leave the company. He was fired because he didn't do anything, and he was just like, after he got rich and famous, he didn't want to work anymore. And he scoffed at Romero's ambitions for fame and fortune, saying, "There's only so many Ferraris I want to own," and he added that there was no chance Romero would be able to fulfill his promise of finishing Daikatana in time for Christmas. So, yeah.
Oof.
Things got, like, bad, I'd say, a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds between like them. It.
But, like, they still clearly maintained, like, something of a relationship. Because, like, obviously they were using, like, id's technology.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently he would, like, Romero would, like, just, like, swing over to, like, their offices and, like, hang out.
Really?
Stuff. And, like,
huh.
Yeah, it's very strange. Clearly, the game wasn't going to come out that year. So, the head of the company, or the CEO, Mike Wilson, didn't have any games ready, because that RTS, Dominion Storm Over Gift 3, which was supposed to be done in a few months, stretched on and on and on. And so they didn't have any games really to promote. So they started just like making advertisements for the company and like for John Romero, like just like marketing, like, what they had, which was like a celebrity basically.
Yeah.
And so they also got John Romero to like market for other companies. And so here's, I'm just going to show you this image because it was, here's this from a magazine.
Oh my God.
if you can read some of that.
Jesus. So it's a picture of John Romero wearing a really great, like, old king's crown, a little king staff. There's two jesters in the back. And so it's the royal seal of approval. If you want to crack skulls with the big boys, the Panther XL is the weapon of choice. Quote, John Romero, chairman, Ion Storm, co-creator, Doom and Quake, creator, Daikatana, in very small print.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like a PC joystick thing. Yeah. So it's pretty great. Like, it looks so like chintzy too. I don't know. I guess it's just like the fact that it's like a 90s ad.
Yeah.
And that like this is kind of like how they were like lit and everything. But like it just looks so bad. Like, the jesters in the background, they look like they're wearing like Adidas jumpsuits or something. It's very weird.
Yeah, there's such a distinct quality to, you know, 90s ads in general, and I feel like specifically video game ads. I have like that old Game Boy ad over there, and it just hits me exactly the same. Like, something about the text, the way it's just like so kooky, but I can't even describe it.
Yeah, I mean, those, like, the Nintendo ones especially, like, they went ham on, like, the font and, like, the color. Yeah. Like, this is, like, pretty reserved, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, a pretty, like, standard, like, big font. But, like, yeah, I think it's, like, they do this, like, perspective thing a lot, I feel like, in like, 90s.
Oh, my God, that is what it is. Yeah, because, like, it's something about the angle and, like, the gestures, their bodies look like they get smaller as they go down.
Yeah, like, the perspective is, like, up and like, angled down. And, like, they're using, like, some, I don't know, like, really, like, wide angle or something lens to, like, because, like, the joystick that he's holding is like so much bigger than like anything else.
Oh, I didn't even realize he's holding it. I thought it was just superimposed over
his hand. Yeah.
Oh my God. That actually makes that Do you think that was really just photographed like that? I assumed it was like the parts were overlaid over each other, but that actually, that makes it quite impressive.
It could be.
That's, I actually really like that. That's cool. They should do that more these days.
So, I'm sure you know this, Tim, but this then led to like the most infamous like video game ad maybe ever.
Oh yeah. I wanted to make sure you brought this up. Yeah.
So, Mike Wilson, this is, the story is told differently by different people. but in all the stories, Mike Wilson goes to John Romero and is like, "Hey, I have an idea for an ad." Like, he already got it like made by,
wow.
It's like the guy, the same like artist who made the Daikatana cover with like that red, background with like the black, like kind of like textured font, I guess you would say. Like, it's kind of got like a faded kind of look, almost like a weathered look.
Yeah.
And so he had him make it, and it's it's John Romero's about to make you his bitch in big black font on the red, and then down below that, suck it down, which is trademarked, by the way. They trademarked
suck it down.
And he's like, "Hey, I've got this like idea for this ad, like we should do it." And so like John laughs, but then he's like, "I don't know." Like
when even John Romero is like taking pause.
Yeah.
Like, you've really crossed the line.
Yeah. And then Wilson says something to the effect of, "Don't be a pussy, John."
Yeah.
And John says like, "Okay, like let's do it." And in like, 10 years later, like John like apologizes publicly about the ad, because he's like, "This is like the worst decision he ever made," or something, because it like made like so many people like turn against him. And he's
really
like,
you know, I mean, I think it's obviously ridiculous,
yeah.
But like, I would assume that would actually be quite successful. And like, you see, that's a notable ad, like, you know, you're gonna remember that.
It's clearly successful in that sense, because people are still talking about it.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think it's just like, well, it's interesting because he says like, "That's not the way I talk. Like, that's not something I would say to people,"
okay, sure,
like someone. But he said like, you know, like it just made a bunch of like his fans angry, is essentially.
Really?
Which I think is more about, I think it's like just about like the culture of the time.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it was like that, like trash talk kind of stuff was like a big part of like video game culture. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I think it's like the fact that there was already perhaps like a feeling and like a probably like a split with fans of like, you know, wondering how much John Romero actually like did on on the games that he like took credit for. But also, I would just not take like this person seriously, like if because it's like, if you thought that they were like seriously like presenting this as themselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like as a joke. Because like, it's not presented as a joke, really. I think now looking at it, it's like a joke. But like, also, okay, let me read this. On December 12th, 1997, in his plan file, he wrote, "And about the latest Daikatana ads in the magazines, sorry if I offended your tender sensibilities by telling you I'm going to make you my bitch, smiley face." Like, this is why also I don't really believe him that he was like, "Oh, I immediately regretted it." Because it's like, you were leaning into it.
Yeah.
Like you could have just not said anything. And like,
Maybe he got just defensive. Seeing
yeah.
Because, you know, I guess it makes me question I think the culture, like you said, is a large part of it. It makes me question, though, how his fans saw him at the time, because, mm-hmm. like, you have this guy is the most ridiculous character in still in yeah. video game like development history. Uh-huh. Like, there is no one more outrageous, and you should be taking less seriously than John Romero. He's driving around in sports cars. He's like famous for doing death matches and shit talking in mm-hmm. his own games. It's yeah. like.
But I
this
think
is
that's
exactly what John Romero would say. If how are you a fan of John Romero and this isn't tickling you? Like, why do you like him then? Do you just think he's like a smart, serious genius? Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think they just took it too seriously is the thing. Like they took all of it too seriously. Like the fact that like they just thought he was like actually like all of that stuff was like really cool. The fact that like he would like they like looked up to him in the fact that he would like go out and like play like deathmatch and like trash talk people.
Huh.
And not that it's like, that's not like, not that that's like a bad thing or anything, but like the fact that, I don't know. I feel like they, maybe that's part of it. It's just like, they just took that really seriously of like, I don't know.
Wow. That's fascinating.
I think it's like a, it's also, that is probably part of, I don't know, like nerd culture in quotes, like has like changed so much since
yeah,
the '90s where it's like,
true.
They were, I think probably the reason they took this stuff so seriously is because like, they were like really defensive about it because like all this stuff was kind of looked down upon like a lot more probably. That's my, like, guess.
You know, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, actually, that must be a huge part of it, because, like, you know, video games are so, like, not really shameful now in a way that they probably were at the time. And, like, this, you can, I bet there's more of a sense of ease now of, like, well, we love John Romero, and he's the video game guy, and he's silly, but to them, he's like, he's our hero guiding us through the storm of being these tortured video game people. In this culture that
yeah well and there's
forbids.
Still I don't know, I mean it's probably a lot of like people that aren't like us
yeah
where in the sense of like there's still I think a lot of people who are like the people who would have gotten upset about this at the time and it's like the people who are like you know really into like the Sony versus Microsoft or you know whatever like who are like
oh yeah
leave, who like go around like leaving comments and like just about that stuff like Microsoft sucks or you know whatever like
yeah
whichever side they're on like
yeah.
people who are like unhealthily invested
that's
in this kind of thing
because yeah.
I think like if yeah I don't know if you like especially when it's another person and you've like invested some of your own like identity in that person
yeah
if they if they don't like then live up to that in some way like you can just like easily turn against them I feel like but regardless it was very like it was very toxic for the company and created a lot of ill will for them and so as they were doing all of this, this was all in 1997. They
God, 3 years before the game even comes out. This is
yeah. He was talking about making the game really quick. Meanwhile, id Software was actually making a game quickly. They released Quake 2 in 1997, a year after Quake, and it had a completely new engine as well, and it blew. John Romero's mind. He wrote in his plan file, "Oh my God, Quake 2 is the most impressive game I've ever played on a computer." And despite being now largely forgotten about and considered like the worst slash most forgettable Quake game, it made a huge impression on Romero, largely because of the colored lighting that was added. So like you could have obviously colors in any light or in any lights in any color.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
Like they could move around and like you would see it like shining on the wall or whatever like as it moved like across the screen. And so John Romero was like we have to stop making Daikatana and we have to switch to the Quake 2 engine.
Oh.
Because we need this in
to make everything
Daikatana.
Green.
Yeah. And the rest of his team did not like this, this idea of switching. This is another quote from Masters of Doom. Romero seemed to have no idea how much work it was going to take just to implement the bare essentials of his 400-page Daikatana design document. He wanted 64 monsters, 4 time zones, a game...
Time zones?
Do you not know about this? Daikatana is a time travel game.
Oh, I see what... Oh, I was just hearing time zone like Pacific Standard Time. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah, like when I you see, no. when you, yeah. Yeah, when no, when you like sign in, you can choose your time zone.
It was a big technological advancement yeah. at the time.
They'd have trouble meeting their new March 1998 deadline without the pressure of switching technologies. Now how were they going to handle this? So John Romero told everyone it's going to be fine, and he told the publisher it's going to be fine. They're going to like meet their deadlines.
Just trust me, guys. Trust me.
Todd Porter's Dominion Storm thing eventually released to horrible reviews and didn't sell anything. And it's unclear, again, the story of this company, they're like, everyone has their own like story of what happened. So it's like hard to say what actually happened, but for some reason Mike Wilson was fired. Like some people are like, oh, it was all just like John Romero and Tom like wanted to get rid of him, and then there's other accounts that say it's like it was other people. So it's hard to say, but he was also maybe kind of an asshole like to people at the company. They were all maybe kind of assholes, or a lot of them.
Like it, yeah.
A lot of them were probably kind of assholes. But
like there was a lot of that in the air.
Yeah. So he left to go start his own company.
There was a lot of that in the air too.
After getting fired. And he then poached like most of the Daikatana team.
Whoa.
He was like, you'll get, like, he was basically like, you'll get more money if you come work on my first-person shooter. And so this became, like, a huge, like, news story, obviously, of, like the whole, like, Daikatana team just walked out one day.
Oh, my God. Just one day.
Yeah. So in addition to the company falling apart, John Romero's personal life arguably was falling apart.
Oh, interesting.
To fill in the gap for all his new vacancies, he promoted Stevie Case. So Stevie Case was like an esports, like early like esports of the time, like Quake, Deathmatch and stuff, like girl
that okay.
she like famously beat him in Deathmatch. And then
so she's essentially like a streamer.
Yeah. Well, she was like, yeah, she was like a gamer celebrity kind of.
Yeah.
Because
like,
of that.
Like what would now be filling that role? That's so funny.
Yeah. And so like he hired her to like work at the company and then promoted her to lead designer of Daikatana and then girlfriend.
Promoted her to girlfriend.
And this was shortly after his wife gave birth.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Some good stuff from
our
friend.
And if public opinion of him wasn't already low.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so we remember, this was not also like his first wife or first kid. Like he had already.
Oh, yeah.
Like split. Like by the time he made, like he was working on Doom, like he already had kids that like. He wasn't like living with.
Okay, nice.
So yeah, this is kind of a serial thing with him.
Just John's just out here killing it in every regard. His life is going great on all fronts.
Yeah. So the release date kept getting pushed back and back. It got pushed to early 1999, and then December 1999, and they were very confident with December 1999, and Eidos planned a launch party, and they still had it in December 1999. They still had the launch party, despite the fact that it wasn't done. And while it was originally projected to sell millions, Daikatana didn't even sell 100,000 when it was released, and it was lambasted by fans and critics alike.
Not even 100. Even if it's like famously bad, how are more people not as buying it just out of curiosity?
I mean, I'm sure by now it has, but like in the first year or whatever, that's it didn't.
Man.
It also, I don't know if you know this, it also released on Nintendo 64.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was a Game Boy Color version. That's what? Apparently like the best version of the game.
What? Game Boy Color?
Yeah.
Is it just like 2D side-scrolling? But
actually, that's a good question. I don't know what it looks like.
It's like when they put Doom in like microwaves and stuff.
I think it's like a completely different game, but it's like it looks like it's top down.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like it's like a Zelda like almost. You know, you can imagine graphically.
Wow, I have no idea what it would be like, but if it's well made, this looks like it'd be pretty fun actually.
Yeah, apparently it's not bad. Like it's pretty good, which is really funny, and. John Romero swears that Daikatana made its money back, like across all the different like versions and everything. So it wasn't maybe financially like the worst failure, but like
failure in every other regard.
Yeah, but they also, you know, clearly like so after Daikatana comes out, and then Tom Hall's game, And Acronox, which is also apparently very good, but was like not marketed at all and didn't sell anything, and nobody remembers it. Was released. Eidos, which had in a like I don't know if it was good business or bad business, but like I think it was like they had put so much money into the company already that like at a certain point they just. Bought a like controlling stake in the company, so that they effectively own the company. And then once Daikatana and Acronox released, they shut down the Dallas like branch of the company.
Okay,
and so all that was left was the Deus Ex scene.
Yeah,
by the end.
Yeah,
and they would go on for a few more years.
Oh man, because I just looked it up and they both came out in the same year. So like when you have Ion Storm that has two branches and one of them makes one of the most celebrated, one of the most famously good games and one of the most famously bad games came out through the same company the same year.
Yeah.
Like, John, crazy. You're getting canned. Yeah. Sorry, there's no way around it.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But yeah, that's the story of the Daikatana being made.
That's incredible.
And Ion Storm. Yeah. There's like a lot. There's so much like it's like a mythic like story at this point. I feel like there's we didn't even talk about a bunch of the stuff that like happens because like, there's just too much. And it's like, it's not like a lot of it's not directly related to like Daikatana specifically. So, he didn't necessarily do a great job, I would say.
it does not sound like he did. I would agree from what I've heard.
Yeah. I think he didn't know how to run a big, or like, I mean, he wasn't really running the company in a sense, like, but he didn't even seem like he really knew how to run his like part of the company.
He seems like he didn't know how to run himself.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. Like he was probably a bit of a mess.
He just sounds like he was a mess of a person in every regard. Yeah. Like,
yeah, he seems more together now, I would say. But
definitely.
Yeah, but like even reading, like through his like plan updates, his tweets, like there's like a lot of like cringy stuff that he posted.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Wow. I love, that's one of probably my favorite part of all this is the fact that there was like these really like old internet tweets.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that makes so much sense. You have this little document, you just upload it mm-hmm. or update it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it we makes so much that. Sense that, yeah, there's like people who like want to bring it back.
God. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a programmer thing basically.
Yeah.
Cause like that's, it was a Linux thing.
Hmm.
Where it was like a Linux program that lets you like update it,
okay,
and like post to it. So, like basically, like programmers knew about it.
Yeah,
and then clearly, like people who were like really like into the internet and stuff
mm-hmm.
knew about it, and like or just you know they were able to read it.
Yeah,
whether or not they were doing it themselves.
Yeah, and that's what's great is that you have like all the people that are intense fans mm-hmm. know how to read it, but it's not public like Twitter yeah. is. So, like,
and this is also the era of like there were like. This is like the era of like fan sites. Like I feel like that doesn't really exist anymore.
Definitely not in the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Cause like there would be like Doom fan sites and stuff. And like, those are like places where like he also like, again, found the people to work on the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
but funny. Then also like those sites would be posting like news updates and stuff of like, because like there wasn't really like there was like the gaming magazines, but it's like as far as online, it's not like there was like websites or like again like streamers or like podcasts or anything where like people would get news about this kind of stuff. It was like fan sites, and that also led to a lot of the issues that we didn't really get into, but like there was just they had so many like there was like so many rumors and stuff about the company of like being spread online and stuff.
Interesting. That
they say a lot of it is just like completely made up and stuff. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Cause that's just the beginning of like wide dissemination of like information mm-hmm. about these things where it's like, you can just, people are saying whatever they want. They're just making stuff up.
Yeah. And like, if it's, it, I mean, it's like, it's the same thing as like misinformation these days where it's like, if any part of it turns out to be true, then like then like people are like, oh, like there's like gonna be a bunch of people who are like, oh, like it's all true or whatever. Yeah. like any like you know when like the like whole Daikatana team leaves, that was just like evidence that like, and again, it probably wasn't like, probably the rumors and stuff weren't completely baseless. Like I'm sure there was not, it wasn't like a smooth company, but yeah,
clearly.
But people who work there say it wasn't like as insane as like it's made out to be. Like it was like a bunch of like 20-year-olds like who didn't all know exactly what they were doing, and but they were like trying.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. They at least made the game.
Yeah, they like, did.
They at least finished it.
So, but as we'll come to talk about, it's not a game with 0% quality. Like there, it is not completely devoid of good ideas.
No. Yeah. Like it's, yeah. Yeah. We'll get into that next episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening. And yeah, we're talking about the game itself
mm-hmm.
and, the story, all of that entails, next time on Game Murphy.
Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.